injuries upon Eunice and Rafa, and 10 got injured. Israel has also launched a ground operation in Rafa days after it unilaterally ended the ceasefire agreement with Hamas and resumed attacks on Gaza in March 18th. The renewed aggression has killed more than 920 Palestinians. That brings the death toll since October 2023 to around 50,300. More than 114,000 others have been injured. Speaking of Gaza, in Deir al-Bala, our correspondent Abu Bakr Abed is watching and reporting all those developments there live for us. So happy 8th, Abu Bakr. So tell us about the 8th celebrations that actually got intermingled with burials and funeral ceremonies.
Yeah, the celebrations were replaced with the funeral prayers and grieving scenes since the very early morning. The graveyard here in Deir al-Balah was filled with people crying and weeping over their loved ones' graves, and it was a totally heartbreaking and miserable picture that has been painted over the course of the genocide and since the start of Israel's genocidal war on the Strip in October 2023. And it's not the same scenes. People are trying to rise from the rubble and having some sort of relief and joy. However, they are being targeted and they are being killed in mass. And since dawn, since the start of Eid, more than 12 Palestinians have been killed. And in the recent attacks, we're seeing intensified shooting from quadcopters in East Gaza City in a Shijaiya neighborhood.
Okay, Abu Bakr, tell us about the humanitarian situation there, if there has been any improvement.
There hasn't been an improvement because Israel has been closing the two borders and blocked the entry of any aid trucks into Gaza for almost 30 days right now. And what we're seeing is families spending whole days without a single drop of food at all. Here inside Deir al-Balah, since the resumption of the Israeli attacks, many people have refled their homes and their neighborhoods. They were, of course, devastated neighborhoods and come back to seek out some safety in Deir al-Balah, although there is no safe zone in Gaza. And now Gaza's markets, the vast majority of the shops and the makeshift stores that we've been seeing in the streets when the ceasefire began are now no longer there. They are just defunct because of the ongoing Israeli blockade. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people here, they are celebrating the Eid. They haven't really had any breakfast in the morning and they haven't got anything. They are just stranded in their tents. And that goes in line with the halt of operations by the humanitarian organizations who have announced a looming famine on the horizon if aid doesn't flow in. And that's what we are seeing right now. That's what we are bearing witness to. We're seeing that those charity kitchens and free food distribution centers no longer working and providing free food and free meals to the population. That is, and if we talk about this specific point, this has hindered access to food for thousands of families trapped in the territory, in Gaza City, in central Gaza, or in Deir al-Balah. That is, of course, in addition to the fact that the severe shortage of medical supplies and aid inside Gaza has resulted in many fatalities from the casualties and the injuries that are arriving at Gaza's hospitals and leaving them inundated on a very daily basis. So the lack of supplies, medical supplies, leaves mm-hmm. doctors very confused about how they can treat their patients, how they can treat those who are hit by the Israeli regime, and just causing more fatalities mm-hmm. all across the Strip.
All right, appreciate that. Our correspondent, Abu Bakr Abed, in Gaza's Deir al-Balah. Now, thousands of demonstrators have taken to the streets of Melbourne demanding an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and an end to Australia's support for the Israeli regime. Protesters marched through the city to show solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza and to condemn Israel's attacks on the Palestinian territory. Melbourne University students also held their own rally calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. They denounced the university's complicity in the ongoing genocide and urged their institutions to cut their ties with companies related to the Israeli regime. The U.S. government has ramped up crackdown on pro-Palestine university activists, revoking their immigration statuses without even notifying them. Immigration authorities have secretly targeted students from the West Asia region University officials discovering the changes only by manually checking internal visa databases. Some students were unaware their status had been revoked until they were detained. The U.S. Immigration Office is using a rarely invoked risk to foreign policy provision to justify their removals. Since returning to power in January, President Donald Trump has underlined his administration's ironclad commitment to the security of Israel. Over the past month, U.S. police have detained and deported student activists demanding an end to the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza. The Yemeni military saying it's carried out fresh anti-U.S. operations as the Arab country continues to support Palestine amid the Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip.
Our armed forces, with the help of Allah Almighty, continue for the third consecutive week to responsibly and effectively confront the ongoing American aggression against our country. They engage with enemy warships led by the American aircraft carrier Truman in the Red Sea three times over the past 24 hours.
Army spokesman Brigadier General Yahya Sari noted that the operations involved multiple cruise missiles and drones, showcasing Yemen's growing defensive capabilities. The spokesman stressed that attacks on U.S. and Israeli targets will not come to an end until the aggression in Gaza stops and the siege is lifted. The U.S. military had earlier pounded areas across Yemen, bombing the northwestern province of Sada for nearly 20 times in a matter of hours. Yusuf Mowry joined us a while ago from the Yemeni capital Sana'a. He has more details regarding Yemen's latest anti-U.S. operations.
The Yemeni armed forces, the naval forces, they seem to have escalated their military strategy when it comes to attacking the USS Harry Truman in the Red Sea. Previously, they were only attacking the main aircraft carrier itself because that is the launching pad for these U.S. fighter jets. They are launching from the USS aircraft carrier. The jets are launching from it and carrying out the attacks across Yemen. However, there's this change in strategy because now the Yemeni armed forces are also targeting the warships. The warships, the smaller pieces that are accompanying the USS Harry Truman aircraft carrier, because these are the warships that carry the bulk of the air defense, which is used to intercept or shoot down the missiles and the drones that are directed from Yemen towards the aircraft carrier. And this seems to be the strategy going forward, is not just going to be to attack the main hub of the U.S. Aircraft carrier, but also any type of military manifestation by the U.S. in the Red Sea. There's also prominent Ansarullah officials who are now beginning to threaten that all U.S. military bases across the entirety of the region, including military bases in Africa, they're also going to be on the target list.
Now, as the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are facing a brutal genocide that continues to take their lives, Land Day has arrived. Roya joins us now to tell us why this is a day of commemoration for Palestinians, including the events that led to Land Day, and why this year could perhaps be one of the most important ones for the event.
Thank you, Behrouz. Land Day is an important day in the Palestinian calendar, one in which the entire world also marks, especially since the genocidal war against Palestinians broke out. Generally, it is a day on which the Israelis violated Palestinian rights, a day in which historical and ongoing land expropriation and suppression of Palestinian resistance is marked. Land Day broke out on March 30, 1976. The trigger was Israel's announcement to seize 5,200 acres of Palestinian land in the Galilee region for Jewish settlements. Palestinians, comprising 20% of the population, organized a general strike and mass protests. That is when violence broke out and six Palestinians were killed, with hundreds injured. But Land Day should have broken out much earlier than that date. Between 1947 and 49, 530 villages were destroyed by the Israeli regime, over 15,000 Palestinians were killed, and around 750,000 Palestinians were displaced by the Israeli regime forces in their effort to displace Palestinians altogether. Nevertheless, Land Day was significant in many respects. It was the first major protest by Palestinians showing Palestinian unity. It was a symbol of ongoing land dispossession as Israel has continued to confiscate Palestinian land for settlements. And it was an inspiration for resistance, becoming a rallying cry for Palestinian movements like the First Intifada of 1987 and the Great March of Return. And in the present day, Land Day is marked by annual protests, general strikes in which businesses and schools close in Palestinian towns, social media campaigns, and cultural events as well. This to stop Israeli land theft of Palestinian land. And there is good reason to mark the significance of this day, more so today than ever before. According to the latest stats, Israel has illegally seized more land this year than over the past 20 years combined. This past year, Israel stole almost 24 square kilometers of land, much higher than previous years and even decades. The loss of Palestinian land has been marked by the maps of Palestine from 1947 all the way to the present. Palestinian ownership of its land is now a minuscule of what it was before, which shows how the Palestinians have been deceived, from international accords to so-called peace talks that were mediated by the United States. The situation has been exacerbated by Israeli control over Palestinian territory through land, air, and sea, from the control of 100% of the border crossings to the control of 100% of Palestine's natural resources. Israel's control of Palestine altogether amounts to 93% of control of Palestine. This is while Palestinians face restrictions, demolitions, and settlements.
The Islamic movement in Nigeria has condemned the brutal attack on the Good Day rallies, resulting in the killing of at least six demonstrators and the arrest of hundreds. Our correspondent, Anjum Abdullahi, has the details from the Nigerian capital, Abuja.
The Islamic movement in Nigeria has held a press conference following the Nigerian army's crackdown on protesters who were holding a rally in Abuja on the International Quds Day. Addressing a press conference, the Islamic movement said while the Quds Day rally was held peacefully in many countries of the world, it was marred by violence in Abuja, Nigeria's capital city. Members of the Islamic movement expressed their strong condemnation of the brutality of the Quds Day attack, saying there was no form of provocation from the demonstrators that warranted the high level of violence unleashed by Nigerian security forces, resulting in loss of lives and injuries.
Reliable information confirmed that the Guard Brigade and the police have arrested 380 protesters, including women and children. So far, we have six bodies that have been killed, and the number is changing because we have some information that some have been killed and been taken away to some undisclosed hospitals.
The Islamic movement said this incident is the latest in a series of similar events where security forces have been abusing their power by targeting innocent and defenseless civilians who are exercising their legal rights. They accused the Nigerian authorities of double standards because while they give the impression of supporting Palestine abroad, they attacked and killed free Palestinian demonstrators at home.
We are demanding for, one, unconditional release of all that have been arrested in connection with the 2025 Abuja International Quds Day procession held on the 28th of March 2025. We are also demanding the prosecution of those responsible for the killings.
Meanwhile, the Nigerian police force has accused the demonstrators of killing one of its officers, a claim the Islamic movement has denied. The Islamic movement continues to reiterate that it is not a violent group and has never advocated any form of violence in its religious activities. It says that violence usually erupts when security forces arrive to disrupt its peaceful activities. Danjum Abdullahi, Abuja.
A pro-Palestine rally has been held in central Rome. Thousands joined an initiative calling to stop the Israeli aggression in the Occupy Palestine Alliance and slammed the EU for complicity in the regime's genocide in the Gaza Strip. From Rome, Max Civelli has a report.
Thousands of people have staged a rally in central Rome dubbed Stop Genocide, Stop Any Support to Israel. The initiative had been called by a string of pro-Palestine groups, including the Palestinian Youth Movement, the Palestinian Association of Rome, and the Anti-Zionist Network, and supported by base unions and political parties such as Power to the People and Communist Refoundation. The rally was attended by people from all walks of life.
In the previous rally, I put 13,000 children killed by Israel in Gaza in my placard. I have amended that writing today, as you can see, because the count has reached over 20,000 slaughtered Palestinian children. It is unbelievable that the whole West is supporting this genocide.
During the rally, protesters were seen carrying signs and chanting slogans such as Israel assassin and denouncing the Israeli terrorism as they marched through Rome's streets. Protesters at the rally slammed the European Union for its complicity with Israel in the ongoing genocide in Gaza. Specifically, they condemned the vice president of the European Parliament, Italian Pina Picerno, for holding meetings with representatives of a far-right Israeli organization that supports settlers in the occupied Palestinian territory.
Israel exists thanks to the support and the complicity of the EU, the NATO countries, and of course the US. The European Commission von der Leyen once said Israel had made desert bloom into a democracy. By loading a genocidal regime, she made herself ridiculous.
Zionism is the main cause of the EU, and the US complicity is Israel's genocide. Zionism has corrupted the West's leaders. It has infiltrated the European Union institutions, the Italian institutions, to the core to push forward its agenda.
Pro-Palestine rallies were also held in other Italian cities at the weekend, including Milan, Palermo, and Bergamo. Max Civili, Rome.
And that's the end of this news bulletin from Tehran.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners' Special Program on this beautiful Sunday, March 30, 2025. I'm Atefeh Irfani, hosting this program today. And dear listeners, as tomorrow is the first of the Islamic month of Shawwal, and today is the end of the holy month of Ramadan, the holy month of fasting, I, on behalf of all IRIB English Radio staff, congratulate our Muslim listeners on the occasion of Eid al-Fitr, the greatest Eid of Muslims. Dear listeners, as you may know, Listeners a Special Program is a program which is broadcast on Sundays, and this is a program where your views are presented through your emails, your letters, and your messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcasts. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. As I always say, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. After a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back, dear listeners. In this edition of Listeners, a special program, we will read emails from Bashir Ahmad from Pakistan, one of our old and regular listeners, and another email from India, this time from Anand Mohan Bain, one of our old and regular listeners. And for your information, dear listeners, the reception reports that you send are very helpful to us, especially to our engineers and technicians, because these reception reports actually enable us to provide a better service for our listeners around the world. And all of you who have sent in reception reports will be receiving a piece of EQSL or electronic QSL from IRIB English Radio. After a short break, I will talk about the Persian Gulf. The Persian Gulf is a Mediterranean kind of sea in Western Asia, and it is connected to the Gulf of Oman in the east by the Strait of Hormuz. Spanning some 250,000 square kilometers, the Persian Gulf is bound by the Arvand River in the north, which forms the frontier between Iran and Iraq, and the Strait of Hormuz in the south, which links the Persian Gulf to the Sea of Oman and the Indian Ocean. It shares boundaries with littoral states like Iran, Oman, Iraq, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates. The Strait of Hormuz connects the Persian Gulf to the Gulf of Oman. From millennia BC up to now, the Persian Gulf has always been referred to with the same ancient name, or the Persian Sea, in a variety of books, travelogues, documents, maps, historical researches, and numerous international documents written in different languages. Historians and researchers have emphatically used the same name, particularly in the credible Islamic and Arabic sources of reference. In the Greek sources, the body of water that bordered this province came to be known as the Persian Gulf. In the book of Nearchus, known as Indic, 300 BC, the word Persicon Colpus is mentioned for multiple times, meaning Persian Gulf. During the years 550 to 330 BC, coinciding with the sovereignty of the Achaemenid Persian Empire over the West Asia region, especially the whole part of the Persian Gulf and some parts of the Arabian Peninsula, the name of Persian or Pars Sea is widely found in the compiled written text. At an official level, the United Nations and various other international bodies recognize the Persian Gulf as the established and recommended name based on historical usage. That is also the official position of the U.S. and other major countries across the world. Welcome back. Before we continue to talk about the Persian Gulf, I just wanted to read one of your emails. One of your emails from Pakistan, from Bashir Ahmad, one of our old and regular listeners. Bashir says, "Hello, IRIB. First of all, warm greetings to you all there in Tehran. My name is Bashir, and I am one of the regular listeners of your radio, and I really like it. Allow me to say most of the programs are utilizing to the worldwide audience, and I must say I love best Listeners a Special Program, which is my favorite. Please send me the good news about all the programs. Thank you. Salam and warm greetings from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. To you, Bashir Ahmad from Pakistan, many thanks for writing this email. Please accept our EQSL as confirmation to this email. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Anand Mohan Bain from India, one of our old and regular listeners, says, Namaste, I listen to your radio programs regularly. We have a listeners club. We regularly organize competitions and give prizes to the winners. First of all, salam and warm greetings to Anand Mohan Bain, our old and regular listener from India. Thank you very much for sending this email to IRIB English Radio. Please accept our EQSL as confirmation to this email. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Welcome back. The Persian Gulf is the warmest water expanse known with dry semi-tropical climate. Its widest part reaches 180 miles, and its depth is from 10 to 30 meters in the west to 93 meters, which is the deepest point 15 kilometers away from the island Biktum. The low depth of Persian Gulf constantly causes land to advance into the sea. Despite its highly salty water, there are 200 underground water springs flow on the floor of the Persian Gulf, and 25 springs with palatable water on its shore, all arising from Zagros or Pars Mountains in Iran. Located in the Strait of Hormuz, just 60 kilometers away from the Omani shore, Qeshm is an island with a great abundance of wildlife and plenty of unique geological formations, many of which are listed as UNESCO heritage sites. The largest island in the Persian Gulf, Qeshm is fringed with biologically diverse mangrove forests, attractive beaches, and 60 bandari or local villages. Qeshm Island is located in the Persian Gulf, and it is one of the most popular tourist islands in Iran. Due to the beautiful landscape of this island, it is known as the Pearl of the Persian Gulf. Bu Musa, Greater Tomb, and Lesser Tomb are also located near Hormuz Strait. And I have to add that the West Asia first discovery of oil in the Iranian city of Masjid Soleiman in the early 19th century increased the geopolitical weight of the Persian Gulf region, and consequently, the start of a wave of explorations, extractions, and exploitations changed the region's and world's history. The Persian Gulf is now considered as the energy hub of the world. Close to 20 million barrels of crude and condensates are shipped from the Persian Gulf and through the strategic Strait of Hormuz per day. With the normal global oil consumption amounting to about 100 million BPD, that means almost a fifth of world demand passes through the strategic strait. About 50,000 ships navigate through the waterway annually, of which 17,000 are oil tankers that head to Asian countries. However, the variable geopolitical factors in the Persian Gulf are not merely limited to oil. In fact, different periods of history have laid different impacts on the strategic water body. And And here we come to the end of our today's program. And once again, as tomorrow is the first of the Islamic month of Shawwal, and today is the end of the holy month of Ramadan, the month of fasting, I, on behalf of all IRIB English Radio staff, congratulate our Muslim listeners on the occasion of Eid al-Fitr, the greatest Eid of Muslims. Congratulations, everybody. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, how to invite for suhoor and iftar. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, welcome to A to Z with me, Sister Zainab, on IRIB English Radio. And obviously, I talk every so often about how we, what sort of meals we should prepare for suhoor and iftar, but there's a slightly different aspect here too. It's how do we invite people for suhoor and iftar? Or with what intention, maybe, are we inviting people for suhoor and iftar? And this is really important. Because basically, what is so background is that obviously the so this in and I'll just sort of read this out in maybe nice language. So it says that the sincere acceptance of a believer's invitation and sincerely sharing the table with a fellow Muslim can give access to such huge rewards and profits which cannot be achieved by worshipping of several years or deeds. So obviously it's the sincerity of accepting the invite, sincerity of obviously just sort of sitting down with a fellow Muslim. So that in itself is of great benefit. So obviously if you receive an invite for an iftar or even for a suhoor, I suppose, but for iftar it's usually, then inshallah you are able to accept it. And obviously then even just on the sitting down, the being with the other believers for iftar, that also has, in a sense, great rewards. Now, obviously, there's conditions to this, because otherwise I wouldn't have titled this, How Do We Invite for Suhoor and Iftar? So what does this mean? So first of all, the most important, the deed must be sincere. And this is needs more explanation, because if we understand what sincerity means, then we know basically all aspects to this. Welcome back. This is A to Z and IRIB English Radio. And so I'm talking about how we invite people for suhoor and iftar and how we can have the sincere intentions, I suppose, in a sense, both when we're inviting and also when we're accepting invitation. So obviously it's all about the sincere deed. So And this is where we really need to sort of ask ourselves, okay, are we meeting these conditions? So we're told that the aim and intention should be for Allah's pleasure and to follow the divine etiquette and manners in this month. Obviously, divine etiquette and manners in this month is that we should be inviting people for iftar. We should be sharing iftar if we have those conditions, if we're able to, if there are people inviting us and if we have the ability to invite people. That is a highly recommended thing to do during the month of Ramadan. And obviously, why are we inviting them? Well, we're inviting them because Allah wants us to, basically. So in a sense, we want to try and purify the intention. Then obviously, I'll explain this. So the motives, when we're inviting people, our motives should not be because, oh, we're thinking to ourselves, I need to invite that person because if I invite that person, maybe they'll think well of me and maybe they'll invite me to do a speech or maybe they'll find me a good job or maybe I just want to be seen as doing this. So like hypocrisy or egotism, we want to invite people to maybe show off our new apartment or our new furniture or publicity. Also the wrong motive, maybe we want people to talk about us and how good we are or of what sort of place we live in, how amazing our food was. And we shouldn't even be inviting people because we want reward in the hereafter. So this is where, or to follow local customs because everyone invites people for iftar. And this is the most difficult, of course. This sincere deed, that it's just for Allah. We do it, not because so-and-so invited me, I should invite them. No, we invite because we know Allah wants us to invite. Allah wants us to do it, just that. So inshallah, we can all purify intentions every single day, every single time we are inviting people or being invited. And pray you gain just a few reminders from today and look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on IB English Radio with me, Sister Zainab, and Phil Welfen. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
We are with you. How about you? IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir.
In the limelight.
Iran's pivotal role in the fight against global terrorism and its broader contributions to global stability are often misunderstood and even manipulated in international discourse, particularly in Western media. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, while the Islamic Republic of Iran is frequently portrayed in a negative light, its efforts to combat terrorism, support regional stability, and contribute to global peace have been significant. Iran's role in curbing the spread of violent extremism, stabilizing volatile regions, and fostering diplomacy offers valuable resources for global counterterrorism efforts, providing notable benefits to the region and the world at large. One of the most significant aspects of Iran's contributions to global security is its consistent and active role in combating terrorism, particularly concerning groups like Daesh, Al-Qaeda, and other extremist terrorist organizations. These groups do not only pose a threat to West Asia, but also have global ramifications, affecting countries in Europe, North America, and beyond. Iran's strategic actions in Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon have been crucial in preventing the expansion of transnational terrorist networks. In Iraq and Syria, where Daesh Takfiri terrorists once posed a major threat, Iran's military and intelligence presence was essential in dismantling the group. Cooperation between the Popular Mobilization Forces, PMF, and the Iraqi government played a key role in eradicating the terrorist organization and preventing its further expansion into the Europe and the U.S. Iran's direct military intervention in the fight against Daesh significantly reduced the group's ability to launch larger-scale attacks in other parts of the world, thereby enhancing global security. The potential resurgence of such terrorist organizations poses an ongoing threat not only to West Asia, but to global peace, making Iran's involvement a crucial factor in countering their reach. The European Union and the United States have also faced blowback from terrorist organizations that were initially created or supported by Western powers in West Asia. As former U.S. President Donald Trump previously admitted, these attacks underscore the dangers posed by radicalized elements. Iran's strategic role in preventing the spread of terrorism cannot be overstated. By actively countering terrorist organizations within the West Asia region, Iran has helped stem the flow of foreign mercenary fighters and limit the operational capabilities of groups that might target Europe or North America. By supporting local governments and resistance groups, Iran has also prevented these terrorist organizations from establishing strongholds where they could train and launch attacks against nations worldwide. Furthermore, Iran's extensive intelligence network, deeply embedded in the region, has provided valuable insights into terrorist movements and operations. This intelligence has been shared with international actors, including Europe, China, Russia, and others, further demonstrating Iran's crucial role in counterterrorism efforts. Despite the strained diplomatic relations between the U.S. and Iran, intelligence cooperation has undeniably contributed to greater global security, particularly in Europe, where the risk of terrorism remains high. Iran's approach to combating terrorism and promoting stability stands in stark contrast to the policies of some Western nations. The United States and European powers have frequently relied on military interventions to address terrorism and regional instability, often resulting in prolonged conflicts and unintended consequences. The imposed wars on Iraq and Afghanistan, for example, led to significant loss of life, displacement, and regional instability, with effects that extended far beyond West Asia. In contrast, while Iran's approach is not without complexities, It has often focused on supporting local actors, providing intelligence, and engaging in diplomatic efforts. By avoiding direct military intervention in many cases, and instead offering strategic support to regional governments, Iran has contributed to a more sustainable approach to addressing terrorism and regional instability. Iran's contributions to global security extend beyond counterterrorism to include the fight against drug trafficking, a global threat with devastating consequences. According to the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, UNODC, approximately 271 million people worldwide used drugs in 2020, with opioids being the most harmful category. Afghanistan, which produces around 85% of the world's opium, serves as the epicenter of this crisis. From there, narcotics are smuggled through various routes, including the Balkan route and the southern route into Europe, Africa, and other parts of the world. Iran, sharing a long and porous border with Afghanistan and Pakistan, serves as a critical frontline defender in the global war on drug trafficking. Its strategic location makes it both a victim of the crisis and a key player in preventing the spread of narcotics. The impact of the illicit drug trade extends beyond Iran's borders, affecting global economies, destabilizing societies, and undermining development efforts. Iran's anti-drug efforts contribute significantly to international stability and security. These measures have proven effective in disrupting drug supply chains. For instance, Iranian authorities seize thousands of tons of narcotics annually, preventing them from reaching European and other international markets. In 2022 alone, Iran confiscated over 1.4 million kilograms of opiates and synthetic drugs, underscoring its pivotal role in global drug control efforts. The fight against drug trafficking has come at a tremendous human cost for Iran. Since the early 1980s, more than 4,000 Iranian law enforcement officers and military personnel have lost their lives while confronting armed drug traffickers. Thousands more have been injured in violent clashes with heavily armed smugglers determined to protect their illicit trade. These sacrifices highlight Iran's dedication to safeguarding not only its own citizens, but also the global community from the scourge of drug addiction. The financial burden of combating drug trafficking is equally staggering. Iran allocates substantial funds annually to securing its borders, training personnel, and acquiring the necessary equipment. Additionally, the indirect costs associated with treating drug addiction and addressing crime-related issues further strain economic resources. Despite these challenges, Iran remains steadfast in its resolve to eliminate drug trafficking from its territory and beyond. Despite the often unfair portrayal of Iran in Western media, its role in combating terrorism and promoting global stability should not be underestimated. Iran's direct engagement in the fight against groups like Daesh, its commitment to preventing the spread of terrorism to Europe and the U.S., and its diplomatic efforts to resolve conflicts make it a key player in global security. While political and ideological differences may persist, acknowledging Iran's contributions to counterterrorism and regional stability provides valuable insights that could benefit not only Europe and the United States, but the entire world.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio by your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودین
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran, Quran.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Yearning for your cure, this humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. In today's episode, we explore a powerful prayer from Imam Zain al-Abidin as he calls upon Allah to help him fully embody the essence of fasting during the month of Ramadan. This prayer not only reflects deep spirituality, but also guides us in how to approach the month of Ramadan with a heart devoted to purity. So Imam alayhi salam, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, had a profound prayer when the blessed month of Ramadan approached. He asked Allah to assist him in fasting in a way that went beyond simply abstaining from food and drink. He prayed, "Help us fast by preventing our limbs from engaging in sins, by using them in ways that please you." And then the Imam continues, "So that our ears do not listen to idle talk, our ears do not engage in distractions, and our hands do not reach for forbidden things." So this section teaches us that fasting is not just about avoiding things, but also, you know, I mean by things, the objects, the things that can be, you know, they are visible and they are, you know, we can see them or even smell them, but also avoiding any form of sin. You know, that is what we can feel by our hearts. Our ears should not listen to gossip or falsehood or haram, music. Our eyes should avoid anything harmful, distracting, and our hands should refrain from wrongdoings. So the Imam emphasizes the importance of guarding all our senses, in one word. And the Imam continues, "Let our stomachs consume only what is lawful, our tongues speak only what is pleasing to you, and let us refrain from anything that brings us closer to your punishment." So this highlights a critical point. Fasting isn't just a temporary abstention. Again and again, this is emphasized in different hadiths and prayers. It's about avoiding anything that would distance you from Allah. And so, you know, I hope that this prayer would apply to us. How can we apply this prayer in our own lives? As we enter the month of Ramadan, we hope for the best, you know, for the best Ramadan of our life. But as it goes on, we may, you know, forget about its purpose, and we get distracted by like things like, you know, that would not serve for the best, kind of fasting. So we should, you know, keep reminding ourselves that what we are doing, and this is maybe the last month of Ramadan of our lives, who knows. So let's remember that our fast should be an opportunity to purify not just our bodies but also our hearts and actions. Let us guard our senses, avoid distractions, ensure that everything we do during this blessed month is in service of Allah and draws us closer to Him, inshallah.